Picture a classroom where children wearing blue shirts suddenly believe they're superior to those in red, not because anyone told them so directly, but simply because their teacher kept saying, "Good morning, blue shirts." This wasn't playground politics. It was a controlled experiment revealing something unsettling. Our brains are wired to create hierarchies from thin air. We don't need centuries of history or deeply held hatred to develop bias. We just need categories and a little emphasis. This is the uncomfortable truth at the heart of understanding prejudice. Our minds evolved to sort information quickly, a survival mechanism that helped our ancestors distinguish friend from foe. But this same mental shortcut becomes dangerous when applied to people. We essentialize groups, assuming members share some fundamental nature. We exaggerate differences between groups while minimizing diversity within them. Most disturbingly, categorization warps perception itself. When people feel threatened, they literally see black faces as darker and Arab faces as angrier. A simulation called NormCorp demonstrated how even tiny biases, just 3% in performance evaluation, eventually resulted in men occupying 82% of top positions after 20 promotion cycles. No conspiracy needed, just the quiet accumulation of countless small moments where someone seemed slightly less capable, slightly less leadership material. The math does the rest. Try reading blue printed in red ink aloud. Your brain stutters, revealing how automatic processes override conscious intention. Two Hurricane Katrina photos captured this perfectly. A black man looting groceries, a white couple finding bread. Same action, different framing. This is bias, not malice, but mental habits as automatic as reading. Organizations have poured billions into diversity training, hoping awareness might suffice. It doesn't. A meta-analysis of 260 studies found most trainings affected how participants felt about the training itself, not their behavior. Mandatory trainings actually decreased promotion rates for Black women by 9% and Asian Americans by 4-5%. Feeling forced triggered defensiveness. Effective interventions don't eliminate implicit associations. They teach people to notice habits and change behaviors. Replace stereotypes with counterexamples. Seek situational explanations rather than assuming inherent traits. Pursue genuine relationships across differences. When STEM faculty implemented these principles, women's hiring rates jumped from 32% to 47%. The change wasn't eliminating bias, it was interrupting its automatic expression. Philando Castile, a beloved school cafeteria worker known as Mr. Rogers with dreadlocks, was killed during a traffic stop after disclosing his legal firearm. When he reached for his license as requested, Officer Geronimo Yanez fired 7 shots, killing him as his girlfriend and her 4-year-old daughter watched. Civil rights attorney Connie Rice interviewed over 800 Los Angeles police officers who confessed that black men scare me, regardless of their own race. This fear has deep historical roots. During slavery, white owners lived in perpetual terror of rebellion. South Carolina's Negro Act of 1740 prohibited enslaved people from learning to write, growing food, or meeting in groups. Americans today perceive black men as larger, stronger, and more threatening than white men of identical size. Modern police training amplifies this fear through warrior trainings that teach officers they're at war. Officers experience higher rates of heart disease, depression, PTSD, and suicide. When Hillsborough Sergeant Richard Gerling noticed routine aggression among officers, he introduced meditation and mindfulness. Meditation decreases stress reactivity, increases attention, and reduces implicit bias by creating space between perception and response. In Bend, Oregon, officers practicing daily 15-minute meditation experienced less anger and burnout. Citizen complaints dropped 12%, and use of force decreased 40% over 6 years. When LAPD Chief Bill Bratton asked civil rights attorney Connie Rice for help, she was stunned. She'd spent 15 years suing the department. Through officer interviews, Rice discovered the root problem. Police lacked meaningful relationships with communities they patrolled. Officers stereotyped entire neighborhoods, breeding racialized fear. If you're afraid of someone, Rice explained, you objectify them. They're not a human being. They're a threat. Rice's solution drew on Gordon Allport's 1954 contact hypothesis. Prejudice diminishes when different groups work together toward common goals. The Community Safety Partnership deployed 50 officers to patrol on foot in housing developments for 5 years, evaluated on relationship building rather than arrests. Officers organized baseball games, visited locals in hospitals, and attended quinceañeras and graduations. The results were striking. Violent crime dropped nearly 25%, homicides fell from 7 per year to 2, and arrest rates decreased to 50% of pre-program levels. Both sides overcame deep distrust by stopping to see categories and starting to see individuals. Chris developed stage 4 colon cancer at 37, after doctors dismissed her symptoms as stress. Her story reflects systematic disparities. Black patients receive less pain medication, women receive fewer timely interventions, and Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die from childbirth complications than white women. At Johns Hopkins, trauma surgeon Elliot Hout found only a third of high-risk patients received proper blood clot prevention. Instead of lecturing doctors, he implemented a computerized checklist that walked them through risk factors and recommended treatments. Preventable clots were nearly eliminated, fatal pulmonary embolisms were cut in half, and a previously invisible disparity disappeared. Women had been 45% less likely than men to receive proper prevention. This is choice architecture, designing processes that shape outcomes without requiring persuasion. Like the Boston Symphony Orchestra's screened auditions that increased women's advancement odds by 50%, these interventions interrupt biased decision-making by breaking holistic judgments into constituent parts. In Broward County, statistician Cynthia Park discovered white children comprised nearly 60% of students labeled gifted despite being a minority. Her solution? Universal screening with a nonverbal cognitive test for every second grader. Black and Hispanic students qualifying as gifted tripled. Schools created high-achiever classrooms, mixing gifted students with near-qualifying peers, closing math and reading score gaps for Black and Hispanic students. The talent was always there. The system just needed redesigning it. After Caroline Criado Perez campaigned to keep women on British currency, she received nearly one rape or death threat per minute. Twitter's response required victims to complete cumbersome 9-part questionnaires for each threat. Computer scientist Melvin Conway observed that software reflects the biases of its creators. Twitter's founding team of 4 young white men had never experienced online harassment themselves. When MIT's mechanical engineering department had few women faculty, they received fewer resources and lower salaries, despite equal tenure rates. The department broadened hiring searches and actively recruited outstanding women candidates, yielding 6 exceptional hires who achieved 66% tenure rates, exceeding MIT's 47% average. Female undergraduate enrollment rose from 32.5% to 50.4%. But representation alone isn't enough. Dr. Uche Blackstock grew up thinking most doctors were Black. Her mother was a nephrologist, her pediatricians were Black. Yet during her career, she encountered persistent bias. When given a diversity leadership role, her initiatives were blocked as too inflammatory. She realized her position was symbolic, meant to represent diversity without creating actual change. After being told you have to fit into the culture, Blackstock resigned from academic medicine entirely. True inclusion means having actual influence, not just feeling welcome. Up to 44% of minority doctors and 47% of women leave academic medicine. When law firm CEO Gianmarco Monsalato implemented structural changes, objective promotion criteria, addressing pay disparities, ensuring women's presence in decisions, women grew to 50% of equity partners. Revenue increased 70% over 12 years. The difference wasn't just having diverse people in the room, it was giving them power to shape decisions. We exist through each other. South African scholar Pumla Gobodo-Madikizela challenges Descartes' I think, therefore I am. Our humanity depends on our ability to bestow humanity on others. French psychologists found that emphasizing diversity within groups counters stereotypes most effectively. Posters showing people of Arab origin with different traits and the message, "What makes us the same is that we are all different," led 91% of people to help an Arab woman who spilled her belongings versus 59% in the control group. At Nikolai Garden Preschool in Stockholm, teachers filmed their interactions expecting to catch bias among children. Instead, they discovered they themselves treated boys and girls differently, comforting girls more while allowing boys greater rowdiness. They changed their behaviors, comforting boys with the same tenderness, letting girls be as rambunctious. Children still recognized gender differences, but made fewer stereotypical assumptions. The teachers understood that freedom isn't just freedom to explore, but freedom from others' expectations. We can overcome unconscious bias by noticing our biased reactions and interrupting them, practicing mindful awareness, forming meaningful connections with people unlike ourselves, and building structured decision-making into institutions. If we see one another in all our facets, we might feel our way into another's experience, an act of imagination that is a prelude to caring, perhaps to love.